You look just like I did at your age.
Please don't say that, Dad.
I'm 16 years old. I'm not a child.
Don't you take that tone of voice with me, young lady.
Love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
You're listening to Honey, We Made a Disney Podcast. Two friends since the birthday boy had to bring birthday treats for the whole class. Now Dad's reliving the Disney movies we grew up on with our own kids. I'm Eddie Ferguson.
And I'm JB Wagner. And on today's episode, we climb as we review Andor. But before that, and before I ask you, Eddie, how you're doing, we actually have a special guest who wants to come in and talk about a review that you had, a comment that you made last week that she started almost yelling at me listening to our last week's podcast. And so my wife is here to kind of set the record straight on something. So here, go for it.
I had no idea you were right there.
Have a seat.
Hello.
I had no idea you were sitting right there.
Surprise.
This is a wonderful surprise. How are you?
Good to see you. I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. I have a feeling you're about to get very angry with me.
I was a little upset. I was listening to last week's episode, and yes. You made a comment about the Chronicles of Narnia not being a Christmas movie.
Oh, yes.
And my bone to pick with you is, how is it not a Christmas movie if literally Father Christmas is in the movie? And they use the gifts that they get from Father Christmas through all the books. How is that not a crucial piece of the story?
I will give you that. I will give you that. Yeah. If we go too far down this road, I will. We will begin like a literary analysis class. In my mind, the ending sequence of Aslan's death is so cemented in my mind. So I associate it with other Christian celebrations.
So is it more of an Easter movie?
Now there is a debate we could get into.
But I think you make a very solid point with the Father Christmas gifts that are used throughout the whole bit, like the whole film. Like that's a very solid point. I had forgotten about that.
So do I get a Eddie retraction from last week's episode?
I don't think I would go as far, though, to say that it's a Christmas movie. I think a Christmas movie has to have music in it. Like, it has to have, like, some Christmas song. This does not. And
are the children like going to sing Jingle Bells in it? Like, what are you needing?
We can create our own songs. Like, we're going to review something here in a little bit that proves you can write your own Christmas songs and make it a holiday special.
It's a Wonderful Life. Is there a song in that? And you love Jimmy Stewart.
I do love Jimmy Stewart. You know, A Wonderful Life is a Christmas movie for sure. We're going to have to dive into this deeper. I'm going to have to think through all of this. If there is a song in It's a Wonderful Life. Like, there's moments where, like, he's skipping and singing. I would say that there's multiple, components to a Christmas movie. But to say that Chronicles of... I mean, we're talking Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe specifically.
Yes.
None of the other books are, I mean, it's been a bit since I've read these, but I don't think they would have any.
Yeah.
Christmas
so the other books don't have Christmas themes, but they use Father Christmas's gifts in all.
That's your point to hold on to there. That is a really solid point. I just don't think it's enough to say that it's a Christmas movie. However,
and when else do you eat Turkish Delight but at Christmas?
I think Turkish Delight is out all year, though, isn't it? For and I'm at least we'll have to reach out to our Middle Eastern friends. The movie did come out at Christmas time.
Yep.
I do distinctly remember that, but I'll give you this. I would put it kind of like, I feel like the Harry Potter movies, you can, like, there are those who associate those a little more with Christmas, and I'm like, I'm good, I'm fine with that. For me, I associate a little bit more with Halloween, like fall and all of that. So if you want to do you and call
Narnia,
it a Christmas.
I claim Narnia as a Christmas movie.
Okay.
But I just wanted to express my displeasure with you.
I thought for sure, I would honestly, when you slipped in, I was going, did I say anything last week about how much I love Glenn Close? Because I know that really riled you the last time when I said Glenn Close was better than Meryl Streep.
Yeah, and that's also incorrect.
Mm-mm. Not at all.
Okay, well, I'll let you guys get back to it. Have fun tonight.
Thanks.
So many surprises here on Honey, It's We Made a Disney Podcast.
I think I was looking at our statistics, which I hardly ever do.
You shouldn't.
But I did.
You shouldn't look at our statistics.
But we had like 93 last month. We had 93 downloads.
Well, there we go.
That's pretty good. So I'm wondering, do we reopen the like listener feedback section that we had like way overly ambitiously opened up like from the get-go?
And I did have some people who went back and want to listen to the very beginning ones, and they were like, what happened to the listener survey? And I was just like, yeah, no one answered that except for you. So
yeah, I'm wondering, maybe it's time to bring back the listener survey. And first question could be, is Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe a Christmas movie?
I like this idea. I don't know if I'm going to actually implement it, but you can tweet us or email us or go to our website and contact us. Let's make it simple for the people.
Let's make it even simpler. If you're listening to this, you probably know us personally and
text
have our cell phone numbers. Just text us while you're listening and tell us if you think Chronicles of Narnia is a Christmas movie or not.
This is great. This is great content right here.
Speaking of great content, we have got a lot of it to cover. But before we get to all of that content, we've got some pretty big Disney news. Not as big as what we brought you last week.
No.
We're not swapping CEOs of the company anymore. But it is reporting that Strange World, the new Disney animated film, is bombing at the box office. Do you have the exact number there in front of you? 18?
Oh, it wasn't hard to find. It made in opening weekend, it made exactly $18.6 million, which and the previous low was Dinosaur from Pixar at $55 million. That's how far this movie tanked.
And just to be fair here, when you say in opening weekend, we are speaking of the holiday weekend, which is Wednesday to Sunday.
Which is even longer than a normal weekend.
Right. So you had a lot more time to make a lot more money, and you have bombed this
You've
much.
You've chosen poorly.
So I'm looking here at a Wall Street Journal article, and speaking of the last animated film released by Disney was a Pixar film, Lightyear. It also way underperformed in the box office. And the question the Wall Street Journal is asking is what people asked from the beginning was when they started releasing things like Pixar's Soul, Luca, Turning Red, all on Disney Plus, the employees were wondering if this is going to acclimate consumers to wanting to only watch Disney movies at home rather than paying for them in the theaters. Why do you think the slipping box office for, do we call this animated films in general, or is this like,
well, I mean,
what's all under this?
So we just talked about Minions killing it at the box office. So it can't be that. We've seen a resurgence coming back to theaters. I mean, for me, it always, there's at least some element, not some element, there's a major element to, is this a story, movie, whatever, that I really want to go see? And the bar is just high in the sense of getting people to drop a lot of money. That's kind of why a lot of the box office has gone for mostly products we've already seen, to sequels and to big big blockbuster films. I've had a hard time from the very beginning of all of this marketing and all of the teasers and trailers and clips and stuff to know what is so compelling about the story that I need to go to theaters to see it. Lightyear had more controversy around it and had more like, this doesn't feel like the same story. And it had a lot of other things happening, but it was big enough that it still brought people out. From the very beginning, this thing has been I can't tell you right now what they're really doing. They are searching for something. They're in search of something, and it's a strange place they're going to. I'm not compelled by any of the character lines that they've given us. It's a giant mystery, and not in a J.J. Abrams good way, mystery box way. That's how I felt from the beginning, was that they just didn't sell me on a reason that I would be so engaged with this story other than saying, oh, it's from the creators of this other things that you like. But
so this is coming down to marketing.
I think that's a heavy part of it.
Because that was the biggest complaint that we had against Lightyear, was the opening title card. You know, this is the movie that Andy and his friends went to go see. Why wasn't that mentioned in any of the marketing? You know, people didn't know what they were going to go do. Is this just another huge marketing misfire, which is also a possibility? I mean, this movie also is clouded in a lot of controversy. You have Disney's first openly gay character throughout the movie,
which I only found out now reading through the article. Versus other things with Lightyear where it kind of got out and then people were mad that was a part of it. Now it is that, and it's openly gay character. And I literally just now found about it because they almost hid that from it. So I kind of discounted that a little bit. Maybe it was. Maybe more people knew about it, and it was. I just didn't hear the controversy around it.
Yeah, I this is really odd to me. I look back. You and I have complained from the get-go about the strategy of putting all the Pixar films in only on Disney Plus. I personally would love to see Luca on the big screen. That is in that list of everything that has come out in the past 2 years from Pixar. That's been my favorite. I wish I would have seen Encanto in theaters. That was a big miss. It's interesting. I don't think the movie going experience for anything animated or anything else is going anywhere. If nothing else, I think it's going to get stronger in 2023.
Yes.
Because you see people go, nope, we want to get back to full normal. We want to fully experience these things. I just don't know what Strange World is. Mm-hmm. And you've heard me review. You're going to hear it even next week in the next movie up. I love and appreciate Disney taking risk on their animated films. I love seeing them explore the medium of animation. And so the first pitch of Strange World, I was like, ooh, I'm interested. You know, this sounds like a new kind of try at like Atlantis Treasure Planet style of storytelling. Is it going to deliver? But I don't know anything. Like, all the previews, trailers, and everything have just been kind of like, it's three generations of explorers. It's three generations of explorers and on a strange new world. You know, and I'm like, okay, we've heard that style of story before. We've had all of that. So why would I try to go do that?
I lost my train of thought, and I had a very good point to make right here, and I completely forgot what my point was. I was gonna pick. The other thing that I think was going against this was, if a lot of people hadn't seen Wakanda Forever yet,
yeah,
and they needed something to do over the holiday weekend, they probably went to go see that, maybe even for the second time potentially. Like that also, even though it was still like 3 weeks delay, like beyond it, I think that that probably still poached some of the people that were looking for something to go see. Yeah,
they've oversaturated their area here because, yeah, you're totally right with Wakanda Forever, and you're hot on the heels of of Avatar coming out. Avatar comes out in just, what, 2 weeks? 2.5 weeks?
It's people probably saving up. Hey, we saw Wakanda, right, and now they're picking and choosing what movies they want to go see.
That was a part of my thinking a little bit, was kind of going, okay, you know, I'm not going to go see all three, so which of these am I going to go see? A movie that I don't fully understand what I'm going to go on, you know, what is, I don't need the plot line, but I need some compelling reason to go, that's going to lose out. This is why I know on the Twitterverse and everything, everybody is talking about more park stuff when it comes to Iger coming back to Disney. Sorry, folks. I don't think that this was the main reason. It's entertainment. It is the studios. That is why they jump ship so dramatically with Chapek, because the studios and direct-to-consumer products for entertainment getting out there is hurting so bad. And they realized he didn't have anything. It'll be interesting tomorrow as of recording. You know, we're going to hear the Bob Iger town hall or whatever with employees. I'll be shocked if this doesn't get brought up somehow.
Good thing he's taken over back again. Not that he could have changed a lot, and everything that's in production right now was stuff that was greenlit with JPEG. So I don't really know what he's going to be able to do in media for the next two, like in the next 2 years, other than greenlight stuff for 3 and 4 years out.
Right. And we're saying all these things, not having seen the movie. We could very well be sitting on like a really great animated film that we have no idea. But I think what we're looking at is mostly on marketing, probably would be my guess. And poor timing. I would also chalk it up to that big time.
Speaking of marketing, we had another piece of marketing come out. Just want to touch on that before we jump into some of the Disney Plus stuff. Elemental. We finally got a full teaser for that, a one shot kind of moving through the world, and you get a taste of all the different types of characters in there. Eddie, what was your reaction to finally getting a full teaser for Elemental?
It's beautiful. It's unique world building that only Pixar can do. I am a little like hesitant. For whatever reason, I'm getting some, like the whole Zootopia cityscape type feels from it, with a little bit of like Inside Out meets Soul kind of styling and stuff.
Are you saying it feels a little too reused or just the same things but in a new package?
Yeah, I got a bit of a sense of that, where I want this to be really good. You know, I root for Pixar.
Who's the director on this?
The guy who did The Good Dinosaur.
Ooh, yeah. No, yeah. Speaking of Good Dinosaur.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm finding that the animation style for this is very different. It feels different than a lot of the stuff I've seen from Pixar. Like, it doesn't have the Pixar look to it. I'm saying it was intriguing to me. It was like, oh, this is like a little bit different texture and design and feel than I'm used to from Pixar. I'm sorry, listeners, this is gonna sound so poor. Like, I don't have a good explanation for it. Go watch the trailer yourself and go watch it. There's just something a little bit different about it that I can't put a finger on quite yet, of like what is so different about this than other previous Pixar stuff.
It's funny you say that. I've kind of felt similarly, just to jump back to Strange World. I felt similar with that, of like, this animation style just seems odd. It doesn't. Yeah.
Strange World still felt like, oh, these characters look like Disney characters. This doesn't jump off the page to me or off the screen to me like these are Pixar characters.
For sure.
The logo does, the Elemental logo. It feels a lot like some of the other things, but the characters and stuff and the design, it's very interesting. I don't know what to do with all of it right now. But
do we know a theatrical release or still haven't heard?
I mean, as far as I know, it's going back to theaters. I don't know why they would take it back to I have all this stuff written down somewhere and I always leave it behind, but you know what? I can vamp a little bit while I figure out what.
Well, it'd be easier for you to access this information if you would fully migrate over to Apple Notes and allow full searchability, easy organization, quick recall, tags.
Exactly. Everything. June 16th, 2023. And it's going to theaters as far as I know. Like there's nothing telling me that it's not going there. I think they're trying to get back in the good graces of everybody else.
So random thing here, as we're talking about all of these theaters and stuff like that, there's a guy who just started a YouTube channel hours before the news broke about the CEO swap called Disney Buys AMC. And now like it's like becoming a little bit more of a discussion that I've seen here and there and everywhere. But this guy is pushing for Disney to buy AMC theaters and create like local Disney experiences around like that'll be the next phase in direct consumer.
Interesting.
Studios will have their own theaters and their own streaming platforms to kind of guarantee the direct consumer, you know, experience from either end.
I love this guy's commitment to the bit. Like, let's start a YouTube channel. Let's push for it.
The channel is called Disney Buys AMC, but yeah.
Speak it into existence, man. Go for it.
I know. So speaking of all the streaming direct consumer, that shift that the board did not think was as good, we are feeling the full force of them going, everything has to go to Disney Plus. We need tons of content for Disney Plus. Because there has been a ton of new stuff. We are going to scratch the surface on some of those things, but there has been so much new stuff that we won't even mention.
You're going to have to go somewhere else for your season two of Game Changers, Mighty Ducks Game Changers. We're not going to talk about that here.
We did not watch about that. I did not watch Limitless with Chris Hemsworth. I don't know if, that was another big one that came out. I'm noticing on our list, you did not include the Santa Clauses.
I did not get to the Santa Clauses, Eddie, but you can preview it. I will let you have that moment and I'll just pepper you with questions about it.
I kind of feel like we should save that until you've experienced it.
We're going to use some of our Disney news section in a future episode just for the Santa Clauses. I like this. We'll keep the holiday spirit going then.
For sure. But one of the things that came out that I watched and I think I recommended or was like, hey, yeah, you should watch this. It was really good. Was the Mickey documentary, Story of a Mouse.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a chance to watch that?
I'd watched that right as it came out. We watched it. Well, I'll say we tried to watch it and then fell asleep because it was a late night. I think we watched it.
Life of a parent.
Yes. I think we watched it like after watching something else. And we were like, oh, yeah, the thing is out. And then we fell asleep. So it took me several sessions to actually watch the whole thing. But yes, I did watch it.
I found this to be really fascinating, really, really interesting. I love both the story and now mythology of the creation of Mickey Mouse. I love the presentation of it. I thought it was also very interesting just to see how much Mickey Mouse has entered into the collective consciousness of pop culture in general. And just how much he is infiltrated.
Taken over. You know,
taken over and everything. It was also really cool just to see like the unique moments in history with World War II, with even kind of the counterculture of the 60s and 70s, the different ways that, you know, Mickey has come in and out and been a part of all of those things. The documentary also does a really cool job of explaining the evolution of the character and how he kind of came to this moment of he was untouchable. You couldn't do anything interesting with the character anymore. To which I really enjoyed kind of that moment where they had the they called the Bake Off, you know, where they were like, let's figure out how to, we got to make this character relevant again. And that's where the Mickey shorts that we absolutely love, watch all the time, that came out of that experience.
Yeah, let's park there for a second. That was one of the most interesting things that I couldn't believe that Disney did, which was to spend a significant amount of time, like 5, 10, 15, I don't know. It was like a good portion of the ending, the climax of this film is basically everybody stopped caring about Mickey because he was he had become a bland icon figure logo than an actual character anymore. And they admitted it. They talked about it and they just kind of like sat there for quite a while, just letting people just rant and rave about Mickey, what he had become from what he originally was. And so I was like, and that's when like Iger is the most prominent on the screen, like also chiming in as well, like talking about it too. And then they take the turn where they're like, okay, let's do this. Let's open the character back up to interpretation and let do this whole Bake Off is what they called it, of just like letting people pitch ideas of, hey, we could do something else with Mickey that's a little bit different. And that's where you get many different versions of it, including the 3D animation one where they're going in and out of the screen, running back and forth, going 2D, 3D, CGI to hand-drawn. And then you get the one that really hit it off, which was all of the new shorts that's in the new style. The ones that I initially did not like, and then you fervently told me, go back and watch it again and again and again until I acquiesce. And now I actually do enjoy that one too. But they definitely pulled away from whatever the majority of the Mickey that I think most people think about nowadays are the ones from the show that my kids love to watch all the time. Mickey's Play. What is it called?
You had Mickey's Clubhouse.
Mickey Clubhouse, where he is basically
Funhouse and then Roadster Racers.
Yeah. Just like kind of blah Mickey. So it was startling, but like, wow, they're really going here right now.
Well, I think you're hitting something cool there. What I enjoy about the Mickey shorts is all five of us can sit on the couch and watch those shorts and laugh and enjoy Mickey together. I want to pull what remaining hair I have left out.
It's out of your beard now.
Anytime my kids want me to watch Mickey Mouse Clubhouse with them, it's just like, please, please no. Like, I will give you every fruit snack in the cabinet to not make me have to go do that. The shorts, yeah. The Wonderful World of Mickey, absolutely love those. And I mean, we've seen them who knows how many times. And they're so, so fascinating. I also appreciated, I thought that they did a good job of handling some of the missteps that have happened, the cultural misrepresentations that has happened with Disney.
I mean, like owning them, like suing a daycare for having the Mickey and like making a paint over the Mickey and Minnie on the side of the building.
That was a moment where I was like, whoa, they're putting this in this documentary?
It was crazy they put it in there, but then also the person talking about it was like, basically saying without saying, we probably could have done a better job of handling, but IP, it's about we gotta and that was weird that they didn't actually go
Mickey,
that level.
They didn't touch that they are going to lose the copyright over Mickey.
Yeah, explain that for people, Eddie.
So U.S. copyright law, originally it was like 80 years after
it was like 60, then kept on, Disney kept on lobbying to push it farther and farther back.
Right. So anytime you create something, you have a copyright over it for a certain amount of time.
While you're alive. After
it used to be while you're alive. And then they, you know, kept extending all of that, the creator. And so after that period of time, that character, that intellectual property moves into public domain. That is why you walk into Barnes & Noble and something like Treasure Island you can buy their version for like $5. But a brand new book that just came out by, you know, a current author is like $30. And you're like, why is a classic? Like, because it's public domain. They're not paying any royalty rights to sell that book. Mickey, Disney has poured tons of money into lobbying to keep moving that time period back. And right now, like under the current law, I want to say it's somewhere like right under 100 years. I am not a copyright lawyer.
I'm pretty sure it's 100 years, yeah.
And he's going to hit that in the end of 23, early of 24. So
Winnie the Pooh just hit.
That's true. And then they came out with that Winnie the Pooh horror film. Did you see this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And everybody's like, how can they do this? Because it's now public domain.
I'm so fascinated to see what happens over the next 2 years. Are they going to be able to win it out and get something new to come in there and be like, if this is an iconic thing, you can't. But it's like, I just feel bad for anything that went into public domain before, like that's like the maybe 10 years before the date happens, because they've had to continually have people use their content for however long this is. And then Disney's just on the inside over and over again.
They are going to figure out something. There's going to be some caveat or some technicality they are going to win this on, and they are going to keep a copyright over Mickey Mouse. I mean, I will be shocked if that happens. I sent you Disney Dish this week, Lynn Testa, the host over there, as he said, Disney lawyers were the ones who convinced China and the communist government of China to give them a majority stake in a brand new theme park over there. Their lawyers are the best. And he's like listed all the things that their lawyers have been able to accomplish over the years. Like, they're going to figure out something. So I am shocked that this documentary didn't touch on that, that Mickey is about to go through some other really big legal battles. The other interesting part of this documentary, though, that was really sad but interesting, there's only 3 hand-drawn animators left at Disney Animation.
I can't tell if that's like crazy that there's only that many or that they still employ any.
Well, there's got to be more now because they've got that whole show on Disney Plus about where you can follow a hand-drawn animator as they animate one of their favorite characters. I know that like they're working on training up new so that they can eventually do another hand-drawn film, but like 3? That's it?
I was really fascinated because I've read a lot of like the Disney biographies and how they kind of did all the different stuff. And I've understood most of it, but actually seeing them do this, the painting, the celluloids, the cells, cool. I was like, there we go. That's what I've been missing. Cause I've always been like, how do they get from paper and all the hand-drawn like marks and scribbles and everything like that to actually onto something that you can watch. And when you actually see them painting on the cells, like, I was like, I get it now. I get it. I now finally understand how you get to where this all comes about. So I was really fascinated by that. The thing I can't get out of my brain, and I have it here on my side screen and it's freaking me out, is the theater full of Mickey faces scared the crap out of me. And it's living rent free in my head ever since. I can't, it's so disturbing that it looks like it should be, is this like the opening to like The Grudge or no, the Purge 7 or something like that, and all these people are going to come after me or something. It's unnerving, and I need to click away from it right now. Why am I still on here?
Maybe after that copyright releases, we'll get The Purge Mickey Mouses.
The Purge Mouse.
Yeah. Would be better. But if you're at all the slightest of a Disney fan, you enjoy Mickey in any way, I found this very entertaining and fun to watch. A unique thing to find on Disney Plus that is not straight up, you know, a TV show or a movie of that what you're used to. So I would say go give it a watch. I really enjoyed it. I don't know about you, if you would recommend people. It's worth the time.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. There's not like a ton of crazy new things if you've read any biographies and stuff like that. They do kind of cover the same ground, but they've got some different things in there, and they kind of make a Disney short during the making of this. So
which is clever. I thought that I enjoy a good documentary that is telling me a story that is documenting something that has happened, but uses clever ways to tell that story. I enjoy that greatly.
So next we have in our list, we have the Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special. I had Christmas special in here. It's the Holiday Special, which was something that I was totally caught off guard. Oh, this is dropping? I was not prepared emotionally to have a Guardians of the Galaxy special. Yeah, this is a special, kind of like the special we had around October, or around Halloween time.
Special presentation.
So 45 minutes. Eddie, what was your reaction finally watching this thing?
Well, it is very reminiscent of kind of like old school Christmas specials, like your Bing Crosby Christmas specials from like the 70s and 80s. So I thought that was, again, I've said it so many times, I enjoy how Kevin Feige finds unique ways to pull on the strings of very specific genres to weave into the superhero storylines. And so to like randomly pull like the old Christmas specials from like the 60s, 70s, 80s, all that time period. This was really, really interesting. What I've heard is that when he was first told to start developing content for Disney Plus, this was the very first thing he came up with. I saw that on a couple of articles, which is intriguing that this is what he jumped at. It was good. Perfect length. I think it's like 45 minutes long. Anything longer than that, I would have been losing interest really fast. Simple, straightforward storyline. Some new, you know, information is revealed, but I don't think is going to be consequential enough to, if you don't see this prior to seeing the third film, you're not going to miss out on anything. But some of your classic Guardians of the Galaxy's irreverent humor and just overall clever. Some new music.
I don't know what Christmas is, but Christmas time is here. I'm gonna have to re-listen to that song again because I enjoyed the.
And all the things that they get wrong. Yeah.
Yep. That's not even close to it. Well, that's kind of, yeah, that actually is true. No. I could have lived without this. I don't know that I really cared for it that much. It didn't move anything for me. I kind of enjoyed a little bit of the Kevin Bacon, them trying to capture him and stuff. And my favorite stuff was when they kept on talking about how much he's an actor, and he's like, ugh, ugh, and they're like throwing up in their mouth, like thinking about this guy's an actor. And then at the very, very end, like, you know what? All actors suck. you're okay. But overall, I was just like, okay, thank you. And then I just moved on with my life and I forgot most of what happened in this thing.
I don't think I will go back and...
It's not you're not going to pull this back out on next Christmas time? This isn't going to make your recurring?
Now, that being said, like, I wouldn't say that Guardians is my, like, absolute favorite of the MCU. The first movie is really good. I haven't sat and really thought through, like, ranking them all. But like Guardians is not one of the ones where I'm like, ooh, you know what I want to go back and rewatch is Guardians. You know, it's that hasn't been the case for me. So maybe that played into it a little bit, but clever, unique. I enjoy them trying new things. I'm glad I watched it, but I don't know if I would recommend it to anybody, and I'm not going to go rewatch it.
The big win in it was that Chris Pratt at least wasn't as bad as everything else he's made over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I feel like he's actually acting in this.
He's like, okay, this is we didn't get a lot of him. Like, we didn't get a ton of him. And a lot of his screen time is him just looking and staring and like making big wide eyes or just like shaking his head or one-liners. It's not like he was not carrying this film. In fact, a lot of times he would just say, hey, sick other people to do the work for him. But it was good to see him, that he still has something better in the tank than what he's had of late, especially Jurassic World. I mean, that's what we're really comparing this to. So,
but I think that even was Thor Love and Thunder, it was,
ooh, that was cringy.
That was painful. There was some really cringy acting in that where you're like, really? Where's the Chris Pratt we love here?
When is the next Guardians movie, Eddie? Do you know when that's gonna be?
May?
Is it this year?
Yeah.
You sure? You are right, Eddie. Again, what am I doing with my life? They must have, like, they're just like, okay, here's a set, and while we're doing all our other shooting, we're also gonna do this too.
They did triple duty on this one. So while you think they,
ooh, yeah,
they did, well, quadruple, because they did Thor, they did the new Guardians ride at Epcot, they did the holiday special, and then Guardians 3.
That's a lot of Guardians at one time.
That's a lot of Guardians at one time. But they're about to lose James Gunn forever. After this Guardian, he is
moving on to DC.
He is exclusively in charge of the DC universe.
And they got to be pretty close to done, because he's already doing the DC stuff. So he walked in already and is moving on. So he's got to be locked on the other film, I'm assuming. The other thing we forgot to mention is we did get a new version of Groot. What do we call this new Groot? He's like 21. 20s? He's like bro. Yeah, he's like, yeah. Bro Groot.
Bro Groot?
I'm making that up. I don't know if anybody else has a name for that, but please email us or text us your name for the new Groot.
So I did. Do you think the Groot in this is the typical CGI Groot that we've gotten in all other things? Or did this look more like a guy in a suit Groot to you?
I don't know. That's interesting. Because
he's definitely wider and kind of interesting, and there's a lot more interaction with him in this. I had the thought as watching it, like, this looks like a guy in a suit. And then Screen Crush brought it up as well.
I would love, we need a name for this version, because we've had Baby Groot, we've had like,
I like Bro Groot,
teenage Groot. We're gonna try and make this a thing, Eddie, with our 20 followers that we have. Swole Groot. That's what I'm seeing online here. It's not only one place has had it. No, a couple. Swole Groot is the new name for him. That's about right. Swole. Like, he's swole. Like, he's been working out.
Oh, he's swole. Yeah, yeah. Okay. I'm not up on all the lingo the kids use these days.
Yeah, that looks about right. He's got, yeah, I can't remember muscle names or anything like that. That's Eddie. The reason did you know that I initially wanted to become a physical therapist in high school?
Do you remember having that moment? Yeah.
You know the reason why I didn't become a physical therapist? The reason, the number one reason?
Yeah. Why?
I failed the muscles test in biology. When we had to do biology, we did the skeleton, the entire skeleton of the entire body. I did good on that. We then moved to the muscle test, and I thought I'd be good at that, and I failed it. I bombed it hard. And then I was also going through physical therapy, and I hated it, and that was like the number two reason. That was the number two reason. I forgot. That was probably number one. Number two was I failed the test. I changed my entire life course.
I thought it was because of the corset. You used to have to wear the corset.
Yeah, yeah. So I had to wear the back brace corset, and then I had to do physical therapy to get out of it and to get like strength back. So I hated doing physical therapy, and then I also failed that test. So sorry. That was a long, long route. But anyways, Guardians of the Galaxy, it's okay if you don't watch this, guys. Go ask somebody what special thing was revealed in it. I don't think it's that big of a deal. They'll probably talk about it in other films too.
Right.
Nothing happened. But you know what? If you just really want some Guardian stuff, you probably already watched this. So
right.
Good for you. Whatever. Number three, last one. Let's get through this, Eddie. You want to? You were very excited to talk about this one. You were very excited to cover this one. I know.
I think Enchanted, the movie that came out 2007, if I remember correctly,
15 years ago,
one of the best live action movies Disney put out in that time period. Unique, creative, catchy songs, just caught me off guard.
Self-referential, aware.
Okay, here we go. This is good. This is really good. So I'm surprised, one, it took him this long to come back around to it. And so I was really, really excited for that. And I don't know if this really landed for me. It felt a little bit of like a Disney Channel movie, a DCOM, as the kids call it, DCOM. When we got to the end of it, Sarah and I were trying to like process through it and everything, and we're like, we can't remember any of the songs, you know? Like, the first movie, there was a couple of really catchy songs or sequences and everything. This one, yeah, there was a few moments where I'm like, okay, that's fun. Oh, you know, it's good to hear them sing or whatever. But none of them stuck with me. There was no earworm.
There was no I've Been Dreaming of a True Love's Kiss for this one.
Right. Or Tell Him That He Loves You.
So what's funny is I had never seen Enchanted. So to show how much I care, for the 5 minutes we're going to spend on this movie,
you went back and watched the original.
I went and watched the original on my Thanksgiving vacation, and just so then I could then watch Disenchanted to have a real conversation with you about it, because I knew how much you cared about the original one. A couple of thoughts from the original one. First of all, I've Been Dreaming of a True Love's Kiss was stuck in my head for days.
Yes.
It was stuck in my head for days, whether I wanted it to be there or not. Secondly, it was funny. Halfway through the film, I was like, we got the right amount of Idina Menzel in this film. And then she came back for the finale in the last couple of scenes or whatever. I thought she was out of the picture, and then she came back. And it was funny, she didn't sing in the first one.
Uh-uh.
That was the most odd choice, that because she had already been on Broadway and she had already done Rent and other things like that.
Pre-Frozen.
This is like 6 years. No. Yeah, 6 years before Frozen.
Yeah.
So that was such a strange choice, unless they were hoping for a sequel, but then to not get one for 15 years, like, still, that's so weird. So, of course, she comes out of the gate and tries to generate all of her frozenness in that one song that I need to go back and see if I even can remember the name of the song. But she's like doing her
Disenchanted.
It was so hard to listen to when she was singing that. The first one, I was pleasantly surprised with it. I enjoyed its self-referential, its self-awareness in the first one. And I did also think the entire time, Amy Adams' voice must be killing her, having to talk like a little mouse this entire movie. James Marsden, bless his heart, he's always the second man. He's always the guy that loses the girl.
I love, partly because of name, but also love Prince Edward. I think he sells the over-the-top campy prince.
He's in on the joke, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You feel like, okay, we're in on the joke on this one. It doesn't go too far that you can't stand it. And I would say in this sequel, The Disenchanted, there is a few moments where I feel that, where I'm going, okay, you're going a little too far with this, you know? Okay, this is a little too much with that.
I was fine with him in Disenchanted, the amount of level that he brought. He played the part that he needed to.
Patrick Dempsey's. I have no idea what they were doing with him in Disenchanted. What in the world? What?
It's like him just running off into so many different quests. He does not work well as the funny guy.
Not at all.
So much better as the straight character, where he's just him playing off of Amy Adams in the first one where he's like, this is
so good. What is good.
Not in this. No, she,
but he, not in this one.
No, that was weird. Amy Adams as a evil stepmom.
I enjoyed, you see her acting chops. She is a phenomenal, like she has earned every nomination that she's gotten. And I enjoyed seeing like the way that she played with the like twitch.
She flipped it on and flipped it off.
Flipped on. I'm like,
on off.
Oh, that's fun. That's kind of cool. It was an interesting story choice that when I found out about it, even in the trailers, I was like, oh, no, I don't know if I want that. I mean, the Disenchanted, I understand what you're doing with it, but to kind of like turn her into going after for the villain. And then it got really confusing because, I mean, Maya Rudolph's Maya Rudolph. Thought she was strong, really good. You know, an overtop kind of character, really made it feel even more overtop with her two, you know, ladies in waiting at her side. You know, Yvette Nicole Brown and the other lady, I can't remember her name. Mace.
Yep.
Yeah. That made that even feel even more just kind of over the top, hard for me to buy into. So then to throw another kind of villain in the mix of all of it just felt like too much.
Yeah, I skipped through a lot of this. I had a lot of 30 seconds later, 10 or 10 seconds, 10 seconds, 10 seconds. Any of the song stuff, I was out on most of it. It
just, here's the thing, was not the great. Song stuff in the original Enchanted, it felt like real life breaking into song. And that was what was so unique and special about it, is you're filming in real locations, Central Park, Times Square. You know, they've got all these like incredible location sequences in the original. And then in this one, everything is lots. It's backstage. It's sets. And you can feel it. It just is too, the colors are dialed up too much. The lights are a little too hot. It just didn't feel real, which I know that that's kind of maybe what they were going for with the whole storybook thing. But I feel like that loses what the heart of what the story was the animation bleeding into real life or becoming real life, not real life becoming animation, which is kind of what happened in this. And I was really, really disappointed.
I wouldn't say I was really disappointed. I was just more like, oh, the second one is what I thought the first one was going to be. But and when the first one this. Was, and
you
when the
enjoyed, first one, you enjoyed the first one.
First one, I don't think I skipped anything. Like I think I watched the entire thing as it was happening. So
I love that. That's the. That's I the didn't level. Skip anything. Now, I was really kind of like, really? That's what you're going to give us? Okay. And I think my hopes were a little bit higher because of Hocus Pocus 2, to be honest with you.
Because it
worked. Okay, that works. Is this going to work? But I think Hocus Pocus 2, they understood the formula of the first one and why that formula worked, and they did it. With still being creative and adding new pieces, this I feel like they had no clue why the original was what it was, and they just did this.
Came up with a new story.
I was disappointed. I don't think I'm going to give it a rewatch. Disenchanted, what? That is. Enchanted, I kind of want to go back and rewatch just to kind of like
cleanse
the palate.
Yeah. Well, before we head into today's full review. Now that we're already an hour into this, this is going to be a long episode. Eddie, are you going to check out any of the remaining pieces like Willow? You're going to go watch Willow or the Elton John concert that Chapek was fired at?
I've watched the intro and like the first two songs of the Elton John concert. Willow, I don't know. I've never seen the original film. Have you?
I haven't either. So I need to go. I don't even know. Is it? I'm sure it's got to be on here, right? Oh, yeah. The original's on here. So then, is it? Then the series is coming out here on November 30th.
That's a Lucasfilm release, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, anyways.
Yeah, and there's a couple other things. That, I mean, they are pumping stuff out. Is it high quality? I hope we don't get more of Disenchanted stuff. Let's just put it that way.
That would be well received. Well, Eddie, now it's time. Let's talk about this series that we've been dying to talk about since it came out. It's been
something
a long time.
I would going. Like to see yeah, more of.
We definitely would love to see everybody else take a note from the show. And that is Andor.
Cue the Disney sound effect.
Okay, so Andor. Does it even have a description for Andor? We shall see here in a second. Yep. Okay. So the IMDb description for the series Andor, Disney Plus, is this. Prequel series to Star Wars Rogue One.
Prequel to a prequel.
Just kidding. There's a little bit more. A prequel series to Star Wars Rogue One. In an era filled with danger, deception, and intrigue, Cassian will embark on the path that is destined to turn him into a rebel hero. It was better after the random, I don't even know, is that a broken fragment of a sentence? It's not the prequel. It's just prequel series to Star Wars Rogue One. It's like, we have to throw this in here to make it understand. Okay, Eddie, we've been dancing around the show for 12 weeks. Not talking to each other really about this at all. I've talked to other people about it, but not to you. I'm just dying to know. I'm dying to get some like sense of like where you have been emotionally in this journey with Andor.
So I need to pull up a full episode list to kind of feel when it really happened. But I would say at the beginning, I didn't understand. I wasn't feeling it. Let me put it that way. I was a little like, okay, this is taking a bit to get going. I loved the first two episodes, like the escape and all of that. Then the two episodes that were like the preparation for the heist, I started kind of losing it. Those were the two episodes where I'm like, I don't know. This feels way too slow than what it really needs to be. Then from the heist on, I was hooked, line and sinker. By the time, you know, we get to that 10th episode, I think it is. Yes, the one way out. I'm like hands up in the air.
You're on the roller coaster.
This is like amazing. Episodes 11 and then 12. This final episode, I was watching on the edge of my seat. And there were so many times where I looked over at Sarah and I'm like, this is masterful. This is amazing. This is so well put together every beat of the way. So it was an interesting ride. It kind of makes me, now that I finished it, want to go back and watch some of those episodes. Maybe I was missing something. Maybe I wasn't fully understanding. But this is such a cool show. I think in part because you know where it's going, right? Like, you know what has to happen, like what big pieces need to fall in place. And so your mind is constantly just feeling this web come together. There, you feel this building momentum and anticipation, which I think is exemplified so well in that final episode with the funeral march. If I can just like jump straight ahead to that, where the music is going and it's the theme song of the whole series fully realized in a band, and it's the funeral march of Ferrix, and you just feel this tension building and building and building and building. And I'm like, my heart is beating faster, like I'm breathing faster, like I'm something's going to happen. That storytelling in that whole moment of something that in all reality is not complex storytelling. Like you're not seeing, oh, this character's really this or anything. No, it's fairly straightforward narrative, but so well presented and put together, from the music to the acting to the editing to everything. You just, you're feeling it. I felt like that was that slow burn that the whole series was giving us. It was just like inching forward, little bit more. Here we go. Oh, this piece here. Yeah, I don't know. That's just a whole bunch of random thoughts. What about you? Loved it?
Oh, from the beginning, I was all in, loved every second of the ride, and was like, why is nothing else that I've watched like this? Nothing else even was coming, was scraping the surface. The closest thing would have been like the two episodes in Boba Fett.
You would say better than Mandalorian.
So there's Mandalorian, and I hesitate to even touch Mandalorian. Like, I kind of put that over here in its greatness, and then I put Andor over here in its greatness of just like two amazing things. The episode with Luke was just still like resonated, one of the best things that I've ever seen. Agreed. Just because of everything we had hoped to see.
We've been wanting that.
Yeah, we didn't get in the sequels, and now we finally get it as a one episode thing. This was the most complete show that I've watched in a really long time. Just like every single person on screen, they had thought through their character and their arc and where they were at, where they were going. Nothing was wasted. I felt like every line you had to pay attention to. And in fact, I missed a line in the finale of this show. And I thought one thing, and then I was texting with some coworkers, and they were like, oh, and then this set up this. And I was just like, what are you talking about? I thought it said it. And like, no. And I went back and rewatched, and I was like, oh no, I missed something. Like, it was that level of like, you can't. And it was actually the one time we watched it and we didn't have subtitles on, which is also why I missed something in this. But this thing moved.
No. Are you that old now that you,
oh, you have to watch everything with 100% subtitles? We were watching with subtitles. Yep. This thing moved in mostly three episode arcs.
Yes.
Of like three episode builds, it's three masterful. Episodes, then three episodes. And it actually, the Nobody's Listening actually made me really mad. So that's episode 9, because I was expecting that three episodes to build and then be able to see them escape. And then when they didn't that episode, then I'm like, I was like, it was that pent up energy where I'm like, I'm not mad at you. I'm mad that I didn't get what I wanted yet. And I know I have to wait one more episode. And then, so that's why One Way Out was was for me, my favorite episode, because all of that tension had built up so very, very much to that point. And I was so you could see this is how Cassian is becoming the Cassian that you will see later on. The one-liners from Rogue One, where he's like, not everybody, you carry your prison with you. You can feel this is where that came from and how he's going. It's the crucible of how he goes from the guy who's only worried about himself and making money and getting out free to, I am now a rebel. I have to end this thing. And it's one of his most heroic things in here to reach that point. And of course, Andy Serkis, we could go on for 30 minutes about the Sir Andy Serkis.
He needs an Emmy nomination for this performance.
It was amazing, right? It was so good.
So good. I love this. Let's just zero in on this episode, this one. That sequence, there's two moments where the acting just blows the socks off of you. Andy Serkis in that speech and Diego Luna like
prodding him
along, and you feel just so many layers happening there when all that, like, only Andy Serkis could pull that off. And it culminates in that moment where they go to the very edge And he just looks at him and there's just this, I don't know how to swim. And it's not like out of fear or anything. It's just almost like
resignation.
Like, of course, this is what this would come down to.
I'm still a little mad about that. Someone could have been like, we will help you float.
I will carry you.
We will teach you how to swim. Lay on your back. There is a way this can work.
There's a floating door that is big enough for the two of us.
I will be upset if that's the if that's our last moment with him. I will be probably legitimately hurt if that's the last moment we get with him. I need his story finished. I need his story. Just, even if it's they pull him out and then they kill like something, I need to know how is my friend doing. But
they have got to figure out a way to get him back in the next. And I think they will try because the response to him has just been extraordinary. The other moment in that episode that is so controlled, but on the same level of intensity, is Mon Mothma sitting there with the gangster talking about betrothing her mm-hmm. daughter. That performance there by Genevieve O'Reilly, she's fantastic in this whole series. But that particular moment is
heartbreaking.
Heartbreaking, but then also like you can see all of the things churning of like, but I'm leading this rebellion and this is the thing that I need to do. And like processing in the complicated relationship with her daughter and with her husband and all like you're just, but she's not overdoing it. She's so stoic and doing so much with so little in those moments. Oh, such a phenomenal scene in all of that. And I love watching. I was not ready for that. I thought this show was going to be so focused in on just Andor, but here we see the development of her. That's been really fun and fascinating to see. And I think that's why this kind of, I don't know, to a certain degree, kind of pulls out and maybe pulls ahead of The Mandalorian for me just a little bit, because I feel it's connected to the other Star Wars stuff that I know and I love, but it's unique and different all on its own. The Mandalorian hasn't connected. I mean, it started to definitely in two, but that I want that connection. I want to feel tied to the greater Star Wars. I don't want Star Wars that is just randomly set in the Star Wars universe. I love this good versus evil, Empire versus the Rebellion storyline. And this delivers on that on so many levels.
Yeah, Mon Mothma is amazing. What they did with her.
Is that that same episode that we get the epic speech from Luthen? I think it is too. So we get three really epic sequences all in that one episode. Yeah. Because Luthen speech, Skarsgård.
It's scary. Golly. It's scary how on point he is in that moment and using his full persuasive energy.
Yes. And what like, a great way not, to describe that. Let him out.
Yeah. So before we move on to Luthen, Mon Mothma, she doesn't have a ton of talking lines or anything like that in this final episode. She's just mostly like, setting up the betrothal sure. stuff. She does have the whole back and forth with her husband in the car. That was the piece that I didn't realize that she actually was in on everything, that she was knowing, oh, I know that the driver's listening right now and I'm setting up my husband to be the fall guy, basically, is kind of how right. I was interpreting it in the moment. I didn't hear the back and forth between the Empire people. I just heard them say, hey, we're going to use him I'm like, oh, no, they're going to get her through him. But I'm like, no, she's setting up him to be the fall guy. I didn't catch that. Yeah. I do wonder, though, in that moment where she's handing off and it's so tragic. Her daughter's wanting this, like she's wanting to be a part of this old ancient lifestyle. What is she feeling there? Like, is she feeling I'm doing this for the good of the rebellion? Like, there was almost a point where I was like, I was wondering if she wouldn't actually go through with it because she would just be like, screw it, I'm out. I'm going to go. I thought this was going to be the moment she was going to join the rebellion, and she didn't. She actually went through with it. And there was something that was like kind of like made me like, okay.
Well, I think seriously, that's the beauty.
That's what happened. But I guess
I think that's the beauty of this performance. The way that she's portraying Mon Mothma is a conflicted rebel leader that is not, it's not clean and easy. And in even in that moment where you're uncertain what she's actually going to do, because to a certain degree, she's uncertain of what she's going to do. And you feel that conflict all the way through it, which is incredible writing and an incredible performance. And makes me just want to be like, ugh, how season two for her, that's got to be an incredible arc. Because you've got to get her from that moment of like making a huge sacrifice for the cause to full out rebel leader.
I think that's what I was left on this. And knowing the whole time that this whole episode, I'm like, this is all I get for the next 2 years. The over and over again, this is all I get for the next 2 years. And having to sit there and go, we end with her just handing her daughter over. And that's it. Like, that's the part where I'm like, it didn't leave me with a, here's the new thing for her. It was just, she goes through with it.
Sure.
And it's like tragic. And like, but it's not tragic in the sense of like, she died or she moved on. It's like, she gave in and she made the move and is continuing forward with the life that she's built for herself. I'm like, I think I was expecting a turn and I didn't get that. So I'm still kind of processing that. So Luthen, should we talk about Luthen a little bit? Do you think he's actually a Jedi?
Yes.
Like all of the theories out there right now?
Yes. If I didn't think it, what is that episode 11?
With the spaceship,
with the lightsaber ship,
which was amazing. I had forgotten that that was in the trailer, and I was just like, "Yes,
so amazing." I mean, I've watched several of these theory videos and whatnot, just trying to figure it all out. I think that's what's interesting about Luthen's character is you don't really know what's motivating him.
Yeah, we haven't gotten that. We haven't gotten like, oh, they killed my family, they killed whatever. Right. He's just...
Everybody else, you get a sense of what's motivating them. You know, you're learning what's motivating Andor. That's
why is he doing any of this? Yeah.
You're getting all of that. Mon Mothma, you know, her position and watching the Republic deteriorate and wanting all of it. You know, everybody's motives are clear and understandable. His... It's shrouded in darkness.
We've learned so little about him in an entire season.
Yeah. His elevator speech, let's just call it the elevator speech, and then the sequence of him flying the lightsaber ship.
And being good. Being like a really good pilot.
Yes.
Like, oh, there's a gear we hadn't seen him use.
Those were... Man, I don't think I can overstate this. Like, those were some of the best moments of this show, making it some of the best moments of Star Wars that we've seen. It's such a great new character.
And it feels at home in there still.
Exactly. Of all of the new characters that we have gotten, you know, he is the standout. We, you know, Mon Mothma, Andor, we've seen, we've gotten in other pieces here. Right, those are your three main storylines: Andor, Mon Mothma, and Luthen. Am I missing anything? Right, he's the one where you know the least, but I'm probably most compelled by his. I'm most curious about his.
Yeah, He kept on having new things around every corner. Sometimes his assistant would try to take over and play, like push him in the right moments, and then he'd come back strong, sacrificing. I love that they never showed that other guy or even showed the battle with Krieger, which maybe we'll kind of get some more stuff there. So there were some things, well, maybe he's Krieger instead.
The restraint that this show gives is, I think, its secret weapon, right? Where the sequel trilogy showed no restraint, went over the top, just like, okay, this is way too much. This is gaudy how bad you are not showing restraint. Here, they just hold it in so well and show the restraint. And that is a great example of what you're talking about. I think if this was in the sequel trilogy, we would have seen like this epic firefight, gone down in flames type of sequence. But here we only hear about it.
It's like a bulletin. It's like, well, the thing was a success and Krieger's no more. Yay for everybody. Let's go see if we can find Cassie. And I'm just like, wow, like this could have been the end of Saul Guerrera. If he would have accepted it.
I love the music in this. I think that it's phenomenal. I though feel like the thing that surprised me the most was the production design. Is there something to the fact they didn't use the void for this? That this is all on real big scale sets in Pinewood, out in London, where they filmed the originals?
Well, Ferrix for specifically was all out in Pinewood. I know, because sure. I could see all, they made several city blocks just for Ferrix itself.
And you feel it. It feels real.
I'm unsure about the rest of it. Like, I could see them, like, Mothma's home being something, like,
because
it's not that crazy of a set.
But even like the ISB headquarters,
yeah,
that the design and all of that and how they choose to shoot that is so intriguing. It just draws you in even more so. It's been a while since I've felt like the sets, the production design and everything are as much as a part of pushing the story along as anything else. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Like the prison sequences, the way that prison is designed, THX, is incredible and pushes that whole tension and storyline further along even more so.
I'd agree with you on that. I felt like I would want to take a tour of that place. A lot of the places in this show, almost every single one of them. Can we go on? I want to talk about the last episode. Everything you said was spot on. Marva's speech from the grave, walk.
Yeah. Aunt Petunia.
Aunt Petunia from Mrs. Dursley from Harry Potter. Andor's brother, hitting some, like, then like taking out soldiers with her gravestone
with her
brick was incredible. The son of a shop owner who then throws the bomb across it. It felt like so many different people in that episode all were building together towards something really cool. The chaos of the ISB who are just looking. The thing that though, that still left me, why this wasn't my favorite episode and why I felt kind of like left a little holding, like something's not totally clicking for me in spite of all of that, was the fact that Andor, that Cassian was literally not central to this entire last episode at all. To a season finale where we're not going to get anything for two more years, and he's just slip in, get Bix, and slip out. And I know, and I've been told, like, hey, that's what he says in the very beginning. How are you able to steal this artifact from the ship that he was selling to get his free, to get out and get his freedom? And it's like, they don't look, look in the smallest places. Like, they don't expect you to, they don't expect anything of you. And you can literally slip in and slip out. And that's what he did in the final episode. He slipped and slipped out. But I wanted more. Like, I'm sorry. I just, as a fan, as a viewer watching this thing, I wanted him, like, this big, massive moment in rebellion and Marva's speech and everything like that. I wanted him in the mix, not just going around the back gate and, like, getting the person and getting out and, like, nothing. It wasn't even close to happening. That's what left me feeling like.
Are we going to get that in season two?
But that's the thing. We have such a long time.
Sure.
I'm sure maybe for the people that are going to watch this in 2 years, 2.5 years, when all 24 episodes are out and they can just watch one into another, straight into Rogue One, that they'll be fine.
Yeah.
But there was a part of me that I was like, man, this is my last thing for like two more, like just knowing it's going to be a while and to really get no last moment with Andor until the very last moment, which was cool when he like comes around and he's like, I'm in, bring me in or shoot me or let me in. That was the last, I needed something and it gave me something. But we had this whole great emotional moment and fight. And like, I don't know what, I feel like you'd feel the same thing if you were watching like the, not that Boba Fett was that great, but if there was no scene with Boba, like Mandalorian Mando there in that final, in all of that street fight, and we don't get him at all. That's how I felt in this.
But I don't know. Like, I don't, I wasn't expecting that as much because I don't think it's in the character. Even in Rogue One, you don't get any of those big movements from Andor. He's always in the shadows.
But he was central to One Way Out. He was the reason they got out.
Sure.
He's driving that train.
I'll give you that.
He was driving that train in the prison. He's the reason they got out. He's the reason.
So you wanted the big moment that we got from him in the prison in that sequence.
Yes,
that moment
we got it for him.
I can give you that.
We got it for him three episodes, like in episode 10.
Yeah.
And then we don't get anything for him in the last two. Like, and I get not having much in the second last episode, but like that final episode, like, man, he's my central guy. I want him. I want him right in there. I want him like leading something or being at least, like, they're going to go throughout this and they're never going to know. Was he even here or not? Like, he had no presence in there. Bait and switch. Do something.
I'm tracking with you because I felt like I loved the last episode in that you've got this huge payoff for all the people of Ferrix, right? All of these little side characters that have hung with you through the whole series. But any of your people, like, Luthen just stands there. He doesn't do anything. I am really confused with even Deirdre, like Mero, the ice Deirdre. Some, like, she just like falls on the ground.
Like, it looked like she was getting kicked and like trampled on to some degree.
I don't, it just felt really weird to me. And then probably the character that I don't get and bothers me the most is Cyril.
How have we gone this far into this and not talked about creepy Cyril, like Cyril?
And then his like confession of love for Deirdre because she's chasing Andor as much as he wishes he could. Like, I don't know.
His
whole character. I don't know if I get it. Maybe I'm missing something, but I'm just like.
He's a machine.
If I have to sit and watch him eat cereal with his mom one more time, I'm done. I'm out with it. I'll just fast forward those parts.
I am amazed. I'm amazed that he hasn't strangled his mom yet. Like, I'm waiting for that to just come back in and there's a dead body like in the apartment. Like, it's going to happen at some point because there were so many episodes of like, this dude is not. I mean, the pinnacle moment for him is when he went and he seeks her out in early, a couple episodes before, and he's not even making eye contact with her. He's just standing awkwardly close in that like bubble, in that like bubble we all have of like, hey, don't personal space. And
don't cross this.
He's 3 feet into that space and he's not even looking at her. He's just like, but I need to do this. And I'm so honored that you're doing this. And I wish I could be. And she's just like, I should report you, but you might, I'm afraid of you right now. That was his moment of just like, this dude is cuckoo. He's gone completely over. He's like a robot that he can't finish out his last task until he can't do, because he didn't do his last task. He can't move on to anything else in his life. And that's what he kind of feels like in this moment. When they come together when he saves her and like pulls her out or whatever, I kind of felt to me a little bit like it was, he had that shocking moment in episode 3 where he's just looking at the ravage of like what happened in Ferrix. And he's like, this was all my fault. And it kind of feels like she's going through that in that moment of like, what has now just happened? And he's then like, I know where you're at, and picking her up. And so I'm very interested to see what continues on with their, not relationship, but like their interactions together. Will she finally bring him in, or is she going to continue to keep him at an arm's length, which she probably should do for her own sanity?
Safety.
But even that, all of that speaks to, the whole episode speaks to something throughout this entire, the subplot to this entire movie, the show, like a side B storyline, is the ineptitude of middle management is so good. I love all from the very top to all the way into like even Andy Serkis's character, yes, is a middle manager for other people who are in prison, all the way up to the top to the bottom. It's just all about the ineptitude and the pettiness of middle management. And it is so amazing to watch. It is anytime I see somebody.
The ISB pettiness there of middle management is hilarious. I don't know if they meant it to be comical, but there was several moments when they're around the circle where I just laughed out loud at some of those moments.
Yeah, making wrong decisions and going different. And someone's in charge. Who's in charge right now? Why are we doing that? We can't get our stuff together while these random people are just walking straight down the aisle, and they can't do anything about it. Well, I think my mom used to quote Pastor Tyler when he would say, nothing is as grating as greatness to the non-great. Like when somebody is not a great person and you have to deal with them thinking that they're better than they are. That's every single person in the empire in this show. And it's amazing to watch it all just unfold and fall apart all at the same time.
Yes. And I am with you more and more. I'm feeling the frustration that we have to wait 2 years for this. Why did
I'm glad
they not?
I could build that up in you, Eddie. You were in a good place. You were a healthy place before this episode.
I was just kind of enjoying it. Oh, I loved it. And then I looked on IMDb and it's like season 2, first aired 2024. Nothing. What are we going to do?
I'm so glad I've like completely crestfallen you.
Yeah, you have. I've ruined this evening. I'll have to go watch Rogue One just to kind of get a little bit of fix until now.
Should we do some rapid fire random things that we also love from this? So the droid B, mm-hmm, sad little B, his name is actually B2EMO, B2EMO. Like, mm-hmm, I hadn't
be
put that
too emotional.
Be too emotional. Yep. Or just emo, like the emo kids, seeing kids, sure, in college, sure, and high school. He was different. They always do such a good job with the droids. Every single series always has a droid that's unique to some degree. And this one was just like that sad little puppy that you're like, oh, when Marva. Oh, we haven't talked about Marva. We haven't talked nearly enough about Marva, but she like when she's like building herself up and she's like getting in, she's like wanting to be in the rebel alliance and is like going and getting into fight and like building all up, and she never got to do any of that until her final message. Like, that's loved what they did there.
That final speech is incredible.
Some other random people I loved in this, it's mostly people, there's just so, mm-hmm, many different characters. The hammer guy,
yes, the anvil guy.
He's so into what he was doing. He was like,
Where is the meme of I've got a fever and the only cure is more anvil? I want that meme.
We need that. The Scottish guy. Cyril's right-hand man on the ground in episodes 2 and 3. And then at the very, very end where he's just sitting there at the end. I love the Scottish guy. He's like the company guy, the company man. He's going to do everything he can.
Just blind loyalty.
Blind loyalty.
Man. Every group's got it. Got one of those guys.
Skeen from the episodes 4 through 6. And his turn at the very, he pushed Cassian to the end of like, prove to me that you are loyal to this cause. And then in the very end, he is also a traitor too. He's like, I knew. He's like, I knew you were just here for the money. I just needed to figure out how. Let's split the money and let's leave.
And that actor has been in quite a few interesting stuff recently, most notably The Bear. He was in The Bear, the FX series. That he's proving himself to be a really fantastic actor. I loved the young guy.
Nimic.
I can't remember his name. What was it?
Nimic.
Nimic.
With the
writing of the manifesto.
The manifesto.
That gets played through the final episode. Mm-hmm. Loved him. I loved his character. It was just a sweet, kind of wonderful character. Then to bring him back in that way, to recall that in the final episode, that was a wonderful touch. I loved that so much.
Do you think that Bix can ever recover from the torture that she went through? Because there's a part of me that's like, not that it was a waste to rescue her, because obviously she meant a lot to Cassian and means a lot to the people there and should have been freed from more torture. But like, I don't know if she can come back from like where she's at right now. I'm like, this is going to take so long to get to just stable, just being a stable human being again.
And what a fascinating way of torturing people. Having to listen to these particular screams of this alien race.
Did you hear that they initially had sound designed what that sound was going to be? And then they were like, no, let's never let the audience hear it, because that's even more frightening to not know what she's listening to.
Yeah, that is true. I would like to hope that she's going to recover to some degree, but never be fully the same.
For sure, never the same. There's a reason they saved her in here and sure. Didn't kill her off, because she's going to play a part in the next part of the series, I'm sure. But
that we don't get to see for 2 years. Yeah,
can we just remind everybody about that? Is that okay, everybody? Can we just like be sad about that for a little bit? Honorable mention to Bix's boyfriend that causes a lot of this chaos in the in the first episode. I can't even find his name right now. It's like a basic name, isn't it? It's like super. Why can I never remember?
Yeah,
his name Tim.
Tim with two M's.
Good for you, Tim, that you just caused so much dissension, caused so much harm by calling in Cassian. Thanks for that, man. But then also just random another guy, the guy who started it all for this middle management fiasco, Chief Hine, in that who's Cyril's direct authority, tells Cyril, do not get involved with this, just fill out the report and move on, and he completely disregards him. You knew he was going to do that all along. But that guy was like quintessential. He's setting the tone for, he's the example for middle managers and what they should aspire to be in their life. But
you don't get any resolution really on Cassian looking for his sister.
Oh my, okay.
And that whole opening sequence of him killing those guys. What a way to start the show, but also just kind of like, hey, what's there?
Why did they never say anything ever, like for an entire season? The only thing that else was said about that entire, was the very beginning. Have you seen my, like he's looking for his sister, and then Marfa, don't go looking for your sister. And we get the flashbacks, but it's like, you're not going to give us anything. Literally right. Nothing this entire season about his sister or why
he killed two guys for that. I mean, was that just we needed something to kick off the drama, the conflict, or is there really something there?
There has to be more. Like the next season, they have to talk about it, because that's the last chance we get. If not, that's just, it's kind of a stupid hole to open and never kind of close that loop.
Sure.
I'm assuming they are going to do it in this season two, but that was also like a, why even put that out there if you're never going to really talk about it?
To which we won't know for 2 years.
Eddie, you have any honorable mentions or anything you want to?
No, I think the last thing that I think we haven't said that needs to be said, the post-credit scene of that final episode to learn that Cassian was helping. I mean, we all knew he had to be building parts for the Death Star, but to see it and to see it coming together, and also to know that he had a hand in building the thing that will eventually kill him is just such wonderful story building. I love, I was like, thank you. You didn't have to do that, but that was a nice little like top of the hat to all the fans out there. Like, we just wanted to know, what was he building? What was he working on in there? And to see it like, yep, it was the Death Star. Here we go. And that's what I'm talking about with, I appreciate how this show, it's connecting into the Star Wars we know and love. There we go. That's what we want. We want the Star Wars that we know and love. We don't want new, out of the box, like disconnected Star Wars. And I felt like that this just delivered so much on that, like Rogue One did.
Anything you're hoping for the next season? What's the top of your list?
I mean, I would want to see some more. You know, I'm interested to see how do all the rebel factions come together more and form together. How do we get to the base where we're working together on stuff?
It almost feels like, I know I just railed and ranted about Cassian, but his story is almost caught up. Like,
agreed.
As I'm just sitting here, I'm verbally processing with myself right now. This show. Cassian almost to a degree, other than, so his sister, so I guess that's the big question mark of like, why is he looking for a sister? Like, what is it about a sister? Why is Marfa saying don't go looking for his sister? Because even right now, you could jump from here to Rogue One.
Yes.
And you'd be like, okay. And then like, almost like bring me in or kill me. And then almost like an epilogue, like someone narrating, and he was brought in. And he served the Rebel Alliance faithfully for the rest of his days until
put it in the scroll.
Rogue One. Like, there is almost a level where he's almost been caught up, and we could almost be like, you know what? We can kind of fill in the blanks from here. So they almost have to open up some more things because he's in now. Like, but kind of how does he get up the ranks maybe in the rebellion?
Well,
but
I think what's interesting about this for me is, well, when they first announced this, I was excited because I really liked Rogue One, but my first response was kind of like, Cassian Andor? Like, that's the character you're going to pull on? Okay. Like, in Rogue One, I thought he was great. It's fantastic, but I didn't leave Rogue One going, you know what character I want some more of is that Cassian Andor. And I would say one of the things that this show did really good is like, okay, yes, this is definitely Cassian's story, but you could have gotten away with, you didn't need to name the series Andor. I mean, you could have just named this series Rogue and
the boom. Rebellion.
You know, okay, I know what's going on. Or, you know, because that's really what this show is. What are the sparks that led to the full-out rebellion? So that's what I want to see in season two, is I want to see the sparks turn into flames.
The biggest question mark still for me is,
who is Luthen?
In the Batman.
Sorry.
Who is Luthen? Who's Luthen? Give us more of that. What is his ultimate demise? He has to come to some demise somewhere in here. And it might be at his own hand, his own doing. Too ambitious.
A lightsaber battle with the Emperor or Vader?
So we got that. And then the other one is Mon Mothma. She's got the biggest jump still to go because they basically had an opportunity for her to jet out of here, and she kept on going.
Yeah.
And it's the her world and where she ends up becoming they're not getting close. They're not getting close fast. It's a long journey. And I think that's going to take all of next season to really get to that point where she's actually going to jump ship.
This, this has been fantastic. I thought John Favreau and Dave Filoni had the reins on what is good Star Wars, and then Tony Gilroy has just taken the lead.
He's a treasure. Tony Gilroy, everything he touches is magic.
What else has he done besides Rogue One?
You know what? We should pull up his IMDb, Eddie.
Because this episode hasn't gone long enough.
Well, we've already well past gone our normal. We're almost at double what we normally do. The big one that he jumped onto the scene with as
Born Legacy.
Michael Clayton was his first directorial, because he did a lot of writing, but when he did Michael Clayton and it got a bunch of Oscar buzz, that's really where he kind of jumped onto the scene even more. And he doesn't have a lot of directing credits. Michael Clayton, Duplicity, and Born Legacy, which Born Legacy was not good. So don't go looking at that.
Not at all.
But he does have he was part of the Born series, is really where he got a lot of his
writing credits.
State of Play, if you love end of the world disaster films and sets in Chicago, I love journalism, like looking for the story and like who did it, who done it stuff. That was great. So that's why it holds place in my heart. And he saved Rogue One. Like that thing was going off a cliff and he came in and he saved it. So not that everything, I think I would a little hyperbole, like he not everything he touches is gold, but some of his stuff, the Bourne Identity, Supremacy, Ultimatum, Michael Clayton, State of Play, Rogue One, like he has quite a few hits in here that he's done really well with.
What are we rating this? No,
I don't think we rate
non-list movies
because we're not keeping track of any. We can't hold it accountable. But if it did, I'm telling you, there would be some gummy worm action in here. I'm sure of it.
I'm thankful we get Mandalorian here soon. We're not too far off from Mandalorian
in February. So we're getting that. I'm trying to bring up my notes real quick and just see what we have. What do we have to look forward to? Because we're gonna hit a little bit of a lull, but
we already said Willow.
If you've actually ever watched Willow, Quantumania is in February. That's the next big Marvel film. We've also got The Mandalorian. Secret Invasion is next spring. Guardians, May 6th. But Star Wars-wise, what's the next Star Wars thing we have? It's Star Wars series.
Mandalorian. And then everything else is just in production.
The Bad Batch, if you're into that.
Yeah, but like you've got the skeleton crew, but that's...
Way off.
That's end of 23.
That's what I might do tonight, is just make my new combined. These are all the things that I've got a theater one. I've got my theatrical list of all the things I'm waiting for this next year. But now I need to bring back together my TV stuff, because we didn't have like the first year, like in 2021, where it was like we knew that it was going to be WandaVision, then Loki, then this, then this, then that. Or I don't have that. I need to create that, Eddie. That's what I'm going to do after we get done with this three-hour episode.
You will create that in Apple Notes
for all of us to be able to. We'll share. Yeah. When we get off this, we'll go into some more like how should I be using Apple Notes in my everyday life. But we're not going to do that on this podcast.
And with that, your life has forever been changed by another episode, another very long episode of Honey, We Made a Disney Podcast.
Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your other favorite podcasts. And while you're there, please leave a 5-star review or share it with your best friend.
You can also check us out at honeywemade.com, where you can see our full movie list as we continue to go through all of Disney's movies from 1988 to 2005, including next week when we review Treasure Planet.
Thank you for listening. And remember, there's only one way out.